Hi there, my name's Gemma Mahadio, and you're listening to 3CR's Imagining Disability Justice, a special International Day of People with Disability broadcast.
The 3CR Disability Day 2020 broadcast is proudly supported by the City of Yarra through an Investing in Community grant.
Hello and welcome to Chronically Chilled, where we chat about all things chronic illness. We're an underrepresented community in the media, and it's good to take this time each month to discuss some of these issues that are important to us. I'm Naomi Chaney. I'm here with my co-host, Mario Pizzega, and we're joined today by Elle Gibbs from People with Disability Australia. And we're going to chat a bit about the Disability Royal Commission, which is happening right now, and how chronically ill folks might benefit from engaging with that. Before we get into that, though, we'd just like to pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging of the lands that we are respectively recording from. We're still recording from home. There is still a pandemic, and we're not in the 3CR offices just yet. So we're all on different parts of the country. So I'm currently on the traditional land of the Bunurong people. Mario is on the traditional land of the Wurundjeri people. And Elle is hailing us all the way from the traditional lands of the Darug and Gundurraga people. Have I pronounced that correctly, Elle?
Gundungurra.
Gundungurra, okay. We want to acknowledge that sovereignty of these lands was never ceded. They always were and always will be Aboriginal lands. So Elle, welcome. How are you doing today?
Thanks so much for having me, Naomi and Mario. I am really well, thank you. Although I feel like being on a chronic illness show, it should be totally fine to say, but I'm pretty tired.
Yeah. So just to clarify, all three of us here actually do have chronic illnesses. This is very much self-representation on this show. And so Elle, you work for People with Disabilities Australia.
I do. So yeah, I'm the Director of Media and Communications. So my job is talking about disability and or illness in public, in the media. I look after lots of things, website. I work with a great team around our social media, and I help the rest of the fantastic PWDA team to talk about the things that they're doing.
And just for full disclosure, I should probably let the audience know that I'm currently a part of that team. So just so that people know what's up with that. So Elle, we know there's a Royal Commission happening right now on violence, abuse, neglect and exploitation of people with a disability. Can you explain a bit about how a Royal Commission works and what we might expect the outcomes of a Royal Commission in this area to be?
Sure. So one of the reasons that we campaigned for a Royal Commission in particular was that it's the kind of highest and best form of inquiry that we have in our political system in Australia. So a Royal Commission has a bunch of powers that are kind of different kinds of inquiries don't have. So they can call people before them like a court does. They can demand evidence. They can, you know, force witnesses to come before them, all of that kind of stuff. So it's got a whole bunch of really amazing powers. And the reason that we campaigned so long for that particular mechanism, the Royal Commission, was that we know that for many people with disability, violence against us is really hidden. It is something that is really hard to talk about and to find information out about. So for people with disability, for example, say who live in a group home or in an aged care facility, it's incredibly difficult to talk about what's happening to people without, you know, having things like their housing being threatened or anything like that. So we wanted to have an inquiry that had the kinds of powers, as we always say, to shine a light and to open the doors, because so much of the violence and abuse against us is hidden away and happens behind closed doors. So that was really, really important. The other really important part of the Royal Commission is that it's not just looking at, say, the disability service sector. So not just, you know, day programs or sheltered workshops or special schools, but it's looking at all settings. So that what that means is, you know, abuse that happens against us, say, in hospitals or in the medical system, you know, at school, you know, people talked about it in sporting clubs, you know, all of that kind of stuff. And I think that the hearing that's coming up on COVID is a really good example, because it's going to really cover a huge range of things that don't sit in what some people think is the traditional disability system.
So what are some of the things? I know that we've recently done a survey on COVID-19 and people with disability. What were some of the things that came out of that?
Yeah, I mean, one of the reasons that we did that survey was, I don't know about you two, but I had a pretty awful time during that first batch of the lockdown, particularly when all the deliveries stopped and it kind of lots of changes happened really quickly. And so all of the systems that I use to maintain my life, for example, just disintegrated. And I was hearing anecdotally from other disabled people that was happening to all of us. So I really wanted to kind of get a sense of how widespread this was. Is this something that was happening to lots of other people? So we did a survey, just a quick one, that asked, 200 people with disability what they said and what had happened to them. And so people said that they'd faced, enormous increases in expenses, some for groceries, but also for things like medication and healthcare, as well as access to hygiene equipment, so PPE, the acronym that we've all come to know, personal protective equipment, but also that they'd found it really difficult to continue the supports that they needed. So I'd found the same, the person that comes and helps me at home hadn't been able to come anymore, and that had made it really hard for me. And so the same thing had happened to plenty of other people as well. We also asked about telehealth, whether people had accessed telehealth. And yeah, they'd used GPs via telehealth and specialists, but also things like allied healthcare. So that was something that I was a bit surprised about, but it was great to see that people had still been able to access things like physio and OTs during the pandemic and hadn't had to stop using those stuff. So one of the things, just before I go on, I just wanted to be really clear about, I call myself a disabled person, but I am a person with chronic illness. And I know that that's not always something that everybody does, but I wanted to be clear that when I'm talking about disability, I do mean the social model of disability. So I am talking about not any particular kinds of impairments. I am talking about the barriers that we face as disabled and or chronically ill people. So I just wanted to make sure that, because I think sometimes that disability language cannot always be as welcoming, I think, as it could be. And I just wanted to make it really clear that I was being as inclusive as I can.
Yeah.
Just a question, Al. Do you think that that's got some implications in terms of how people have engaged with the Royal Commission?
I do. Yeah. And I think it's a really important point to think about, like how for us as people with chronic illness, the things that we may have experienced as violence and abuse may be different than other people with disabilities. So I know for me, I'm going to make a submission, and that submission is mostly going to be about my experiences in hospital. So multiple experiences in hospital for very long periods of time. And so a lot of my navigation of the medical system has been deeply traumatizing. And I'm now, a firmly middle-aged person. So, but I got sick when I was 19, and going into a system like that 30 years ago as a young person was extremely difficult. And I still remember very clearly what happened to me and how terrible it was. So I think that they're the kinds of experiences that I want to share with the Royal Commission, because I know that for those of us who have to engage with the medical system over years and years, and in my case, decades, the medical system shouldn't be traumatizing, but for far too many of us, it is.
I've actually been working on my own submission, and a lot of it is also similar to yours, Elle, focused on health, not hospital so much, but just GPs in general. Just my experiences around that have been very much that GPs can be gatekeepers to services for people with chronic illness. And this is something I see in support groups a lot as well, is that you see people having unfortunate interactions with GPs who don't take things seriously or don't understand what the symptoms mean in a practical sense, in terms of the support that you need. And yeah, there's a gatekeeping happens there that I think fits into what the Royal Commission is trying to get at, because it's basically neglect. It's financial neglect. It's neglect when it comes to the services that people need. Yeah, I think it's really important that people with chronic illness do actually engage with this, whether or not you identify as a person with a disability, which some people don't, and that's okay.
Yeah, I'd strongly agree with that. And I think that the difference it makes having a decent GP as someone with chronic illness versus just an average GP is profound. And it doesn't, it shouldn't be like that. I think particularly if you live in an area where there aren't that many options when it comes to GPs, or it's very difficult for you as a person with a chronic illness to access GPs easily, or to communicate about this stuff in a way that GPs need to understand. Like, they have their checkboxes that they need to know about. And I have found over the years that sometimes you need to use the right language, and you need to be able to phrase things in particular ways. And I mean, that is, as you say, Naomi, such a gatekeeping role. Like, instead of actually supporting and encouraging people to access things like chronic care plans or anything like that, you have to know that these things exist to be able to ask for them, you know? Whereas it should be that if you have a chronic illness, we should be supported to actually access things like allied health as much as possible, because the preventative nature of that is so great that there really shouldn't be barriers, particularly financial, to accessing those kind of services.
Cool. So on that note, we're going to take a quick break. So you're listening to Chronically Chilled on 3CR 855 AM. We're here with Elle Gibbs from People with Disability Australia, and we'll be back in a moment.
Hey, all you mob, it's Dr. Mark Winnetong here. Coronavirus has certainly changed the way we live, work and connect. These changes can be hard for some of us and can make us feel no good in our head or spirit, like sad or worried all the time. Some of us might already be dealing with other things like sickness, trauma, and this can make it really hard for us to feel good about anything at the moment. If you're feeling like this, remember, it's okay to ask for help. Have a yarn to someone you trust, like your family or an Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander health worker. You can also call Beyond Blue, Lifeline or the Kids Helpline to talk to someone, or look at some helpful information at headtohealth.gov.au on the internet.
A 3CR supporter.
My name's Jane Rosengrave, and you're listening to a Yorta Yorta Strong Power for Woman on Disability Day on 3CR.
Welcome back to Chronically Chilled on 3CR. I'm Naomi Chaney, and I'm here with my co-host Mario Psega and Elle Gibbs from People with Disability Australia. If you've just joined us, we're having a chat about the Disability Royal Commission into violence, abuse, neglect and exploitation of people with disability. If this is bringing up any upset or issues for you, please remember you can always call Lifeline on 131114 if you need support. We've just been talking about how some people with chronic illness identify as disabled and some don't. And in that regard, it shouldn't matter. You can still engage with the Royal Commission. How can we actually go about doing that, Elle, if we want to let the Royal Commission know about some of the issues that have been affecting us?
Yeah, I mean, there's quite a few ways of making a submission. So if you feel comfortable to make a submission on your own, you could just go to the Royal Commission's website. You could make a submission via audio, so you had an audio recording or a video recording. And I think that's particularly important for people who have chronic illness that has any kind of energy impairment. I think being able to do it as an audio recording rather than having to write something, I think, is really important. And there's forms and details about how to do that in EasyRead and Auslan and in plain English as well on the website, and in lots of community languages as well. But there's also a whole bunch of funded supports through the Royal Commission that can assist you in making a submission. So there is free counselling available through the Blue Knot service. There's free legal support through the Your Story legal service. And then there's support through disability advocacy services. So like PWDA, we're funded to do disability advocacy around the Royal Commission in New South Wales and Queensland, but there's lots of other services funded to do disability Royal Commission advocacy support and in Victoria. And they can support you to fill out the submission form and to tell your story. But also, and what our advocates are often finding is people are coming to them to say, I want to tell my story to the Royal Commission, but it turns out there's a whole lot of other stuff going on in their lives that they can use some advocacy support around. And so people are able to get help on a range of fronts.
What I find interesting about this Royal Commission is, one, it's dealing with disability, but it's also then dealing with violence and abuse. And sometimes it can be really hard for people who are experiencing any kind of violence and abuse to actually be able to identify and articulate it. And I wonder if that's something that's come up kind of during this Royal Commission in terms of people making a submission and being able to kind of say, actually what's being done here or what I've experienced is actually not okay. And it's this and this and this, because I think people can find it incredibly hard to kind of identify stuff for themselves.
I think that is such a huge issue for many people with disability. They may not recognise that what's happening is violence or abuse or exploitation. Some of that is because for many of us, the forms of abuse that we can experience can be different to non-disabled people. So it can be things like removing a mobility device. I'm going to talk about stuff that I won't talk in lots of detail, but I am going to talk about stuff that's a little bit upsetting. So just giving you a heads up and turn off if for a couple of minutes, but I won't go into too much detail. But some of that can be about, removing mobility device or removing care and support. It can look differently than abuse that happens to non-disabled people. And so exploitation can be things like removing someone's bank cards and having control of someone's money. It can be about removing phones or removing access. It can also be about not explaining things and not letting people know that they have rights and that they have support. So, it's a massive issue. And I think one of the things that we are concerned about, and we have talked to the Royal Commission about that, is there needs to be a really big outreach program by the Royal Commission, but also by us, by trusted organisations who can reach out to people with disability and talk about the different kinds of things that do happen to us. Like, when I talk about some of my experiences in hospital, people talk about, but I didn't think that that was about violence or abuse or neglect. But it is. And it's really important that this stuff is counted and that it's not just, we hear campaigns around domestic and family violence, for example, but we don't think about that happening in group homes or in boarding houses and not necessarily by partners. So there are a whole range of issues that are unique to people with disability that I think need much more explanation and much more awareness and much more kind of outreach into communities to talk about the fact that, A, this is an issue, this is actually violence and abuse, B, this is what you can do about it to stop it happening, and C, this is how the Royal Commission can help. And I think that that's a really important next step that the Royal Commission really urgently needs to start taking, and that I'm really hoping that when the interim report comes down in October, that the Royal Commission acknowledges this and acknowledges that they need to do a bunch of work around this and making sure that people are understanding both what violence is, but also what our rights are. I mean, if you're a person with disability who's gone to a special school, you've ended up working in a sheltered workshop, someone's probably never told you that you have rights and never talked to you about the fact that you can have control of your money and you can make decisions for yourself. So I think it's really, really important that this kind of conversation around what our rights are is part of the conversation around the Royal Commission.
Yeah, and to provide some kind of environment where it's actually safe to be able to speak about this stuff, because Absolutely. It's often so unspoken. Yeah.
Yeah. And I also think that one of the things that I think it's going to be really important for the Royal Commission to understand is the huge power imbalances in our community. So for a person with disability who, say, lives in an unregulated boarding house, they live in a small room, they live with a whole bunch of other people, how safe is it for them to talk about the abuse that they're experiencing? And if that's the only place that they could find to live, the only accessible place that they can find to live, you know, the cost of them speaking out can be further abuse, but it also can be homelessness. And these are very real risks that people are being asked to take to talk to the Royal Commission. So one of the things that we're really looking forward to the government bringing in some legislation to basically make sure that people can tell their stories safely, that can be confidential. And because we know that many people with disability don't feel safe yet to tell their stories because they are worried about it getting out, and for the service provider that they're talking about, for example, finding out that they've said these things about them.
So in situations where someone's service provider is also providing their living situation, so for example, in group homes, is there a way for people like if someone has that much control over every aspect of your life, basically, confidentiality is one issue, but also just like some people will actually need help to do things like access a phone or access a computer. Is there any way at the moment that we might be able to reach people who actually can't access the technology to make a submission?
It's such a great question, and I think it is really important that the Royal Commission acknowledges how hard it is going to be for some people to make submissions. So this is one of the roles that disability advocacy can play, and I know that some of our advocates are doing this exact thing, actually sitting with people and working through their submissions, making sure that they can get them into the Royal Commission and making sure that they can do it safely and with the supports that they need. But we need way more of this to be happening. So this is only just kind of the tip of the iceberg, if you like. What we need is for there to be much more of these kind of services going in and doing it proactive outreach into group homes, into boarding houses, into caravan parks, into the places where people with disability who have the least are living.
Well, can I ask, so not all Royal Commissions are equal in terms of what resources are given to them. What are the resources like in terms of this Royal Commission, and do you think it's kind of enough?
Yeah, this Royal Commission's had quite a lot of resources put towards it overall. So the Royal Commission itself, and then there's been quite a lot of funding gone to Blue Knot for their free counselling services, and to Legal Aid, I think it is, for the Your Story legal service, which is free legal assistance. And then there has been some funding that's gone to disability advocacy organisations like ours. But I think that in terms of the scale of the issue, one of my concerns is that the Royal Commission hasn't been given enough time to do their job. And particularly with COVID, I think it's kind of like even the Aged Care Commission has been given an extra 6 months. And I think we really need to start talking around, do we need a bit more time for the Royal Commission to run and therefore some more money? But I also think that we do need to do some investing in the outreach around advocacy, particularly to some communities. So the Royal Commission's recently reported that only a tiny percentage of people with disability from culturally and linguistically diverse backgrounds have put in submissions, and same for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people with disability. Now, this is not acceptable. Like it is kind of, we have to make sure that this Royal Commission has whatever resources that we need to do to make sure people can put in their submissions and that they know about the Royal Commission. So I think that this is going to be the next steps. I mean, if I was in charge of marketing of the Royal Commission, which I'm not, then I know what I would do. But I think that this kind of stuff where this outreach from everybody, so that includes disability advocacy like PWDA, is going to be incredibly important. So but COVID, of course, has made things even more difficult. So many people with disability have much less supports, have got much less money, and you know, in situations potentially where they're much less safe. So we heard a report this morning of 1,500 women talking about the huge increase in domestic and family violence. And we know already that women and girls with disability are far more likely to experience domestic and family violence. So we can only extrapolate from those figures that this is happening to people with disability now during COVID. And so hopefully there'll be some investing in finding that out. But I also really hope that people do tell the Royal Commission if this stuff is happening to you now, but also to talk about it if it has happened to you in the past. So, you know, I think at everything from not being believed, not being supported, not being able to access help, to talking about living in poverty, to talking about being on the DSP. I mean, I was on the DSP for many years. It's really difficult. And I think it's important for us to talk about the financial implications, impacts of having a chronic illness, of accessing allied health, those kind of things. Because if the Royal Commission doesn't know about that, they can't make recommendations about it.
And I just, it's also just about if something just hasn't felt right. Like you might not know how to articulate it all and, you know, all that stuff, but just something that you've experienced, if something just hasn't felt right, it's also important to kind of contribute that to the Royal Commission. Mm. Or to get support to be able to do that. Yeah.
And even, I mean, take advantage of the services that are available through the Royal Commission, even if you don't end up making a submission. So there is free counselling through Blue Knot, and there is that free legal advice, and they'll be able to support you to talk about this stuff and to have a think about if making a submission is right for you.
So what are the outcomes that PWDA is actually hoping for from the Royal Commission?
An end to violence against people with disability. I think for me, one of the things around the 2015 Senate inquiry that I watched and listened to all of that, and I've read all of the reports from it, was how pervasive this violence is against us. And that one of the fundamental reasons for that is that we aren't valued for who we are. And I think that one of the things that I want to come out of this is that we start to connect these dots, that we start to connect that, you know, us not knowing our rights, us not being included in society, us not being respected as people with disability and valued for us as people, that directly contributes to this sort of violence against us. And I want things like segregation to end, you know, that people with disability can live in the community just like everyone else, go to school, go to work, and have same access to things. So, I mean, we've heard already in one hearing that people with intellectual disability die 25 to 30 years younger than other people, and don't have access to things like screening services, and, you know, in hospital are told that their lives aren't worth living. And it's just horrific. So I want an end to all of that. And I want an end to, you know, people seeing us as somehow not real or whole people. So, because we absolutely are. And we have value and we have strengths and we have lots to offer, just as, you know, people as we are, you know, right now, even if we are lying in our beds, even if we are like me sitting here in my pajamas at work, I think it's important that, you know, us as disabled people, as sick people, that we are included and we have value.
I want to thank you so much, Elle, for joining us today and going through all of that. I'm sure that's some very useful information and a lot to think about for everyone at home. And I want to reiterate, if this is bringing up any upset or issues for you, remember you can always call Lifeline on 131114 if you need that support. And Alice talked about Blue Knot as well, which is a counselling service which you can access as well. That's for free. To everyone at home, you've been listening to Chronically Chilled on 3CR 855 AM. And if you missed out on the beginning of the show, the podcast will be available at www.3cr.org.au. And if you enjoyed our show and you got something from it and you wanted to support Radical Radio, you can always support 3CR by becoming a subscriber or donating to the Station Appeal, which you can also find on the website. Chronically Chilled is on the air on the first Wednesday of every month. So until then, look after yourself and we'll see you next month.
You're listening to 3CR Community Radio 855 AM on digital and online. 3CR Radical Radio.
If you or someone you care for is struggling with a mental illness or other disability and you need someone to talk to, you can call the Wellways Helpline. Wellways Helpline is a volunteer support and referral service that provides information to people experiencing mental health issues or other disabilities, as well as their family, friends and carers. We're here to talk if you are feeling socially isolated, seeking information about mental health or mental health services, or just need someone to talk to. As a peer-based service, everyone working at Wellways Helpline has a lived experience of mental health issues or disability. Wellways Helpline is a national service and operates Monday to Friday, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., excluding public holidays. So if you're struggling yourself or are struggling to help someone else, please call Wellways Helpline on 1300 111 500. That's 1300 111 500. Wellways supports 3CR.
Nisambula vinaka na yadangu komereani galovakawasa. You're listening to 3CR's International Day of People with Disability broadcast.